Gonzaga Hockey. Morning to you. Is there anyone here today on behalf of Mr. Jorgensen? Does not appear to be so. You may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Julie Aganon. I'm here on behalf of the Relator for Counsel for Discipline. We're here on an original action, the disciplinary action against Attorney Jeremy Jorgensen, who is a member of the Nebraska State Bar. Mr. Jorgensen originally just procedurally failed to file an answer in this matter, and as a relator, I filed a motion for judgment on the pleadings, which was granted. And so we're here to discuss sanctions today alone. I want to go through the procedural part of the case a little bit. The formal charges that are before you are based upon two original grievances that came to our office. The first one came in August of 2016. The grievance was from a former criminal client of the defendant who was incarcerated, who had made several attempts to contact the defendant, was unable to get his record to aid in his appeal, submitted a grievance to us. We sent the information to Mr. Jorgensen in August of 2016. In September of 2016, Mr. Jorgensen asked for an extension of time due to a pending very large quadruple homicide case he was handling in Douglas County. He was granted extra time pending, you know, so he could concentrate on that case and then respond to us. That homicide case ended October 28th of 2016. Our office did not get a response from Mr. Jorgensen on that first grievance after that date. The second grievance came actually from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit. Mr. Jorgensen had been appointed to represent an individual on an appeal, had, I believe, filed his brief, and then the court had served him notification that it was set for oral arguments on October 25th of 2016. The week prior to that, Mr. Jorgensen returned the form to the court acknowledging the date that the oral arguments were set. October 25th of 2016 came and Mr. Jorgensen failed to appear when his case was called numerous times. That court issued a show cause order and Mr. Jorgensen failed to respond to that by the due date. Nearly a month later, Mr. Jorgensen did file an untimely, he called it, response to the show cause. At that point in time, that was received by our office. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals then admonished Mr. Jorgensen and stated that if he was a member of the Eighth Circuit Bar, his actions would be grounds for suspension or disbarment before that court, and they directed that that order be submitted to the Council for Discipline. So those two issues were combined into one matter in our office and escalated to a formal grievance in January 2012, and that was sent to Mr. Jorgensen. He replied to that at the end of January of 2017. He did submit his first response. At that point in time, he said that he accepted responsibility for missing those, but then made many excuses blaming support staff that they failed to manage his calendar while he was busy with another case, failed to find someone else to cover his cases, and so forth. Ultimately, the first grievance received his file, I believe, in November of 2016, many months after he had requested that. So a formal complaint was drafted and then sent to Mr. Jorgensen for his response before it was sent to the Committee on Inquiry. Mr. Jorgensen failed to respond to that. Then formal charges were filed, which are in front of you now, and those allege that he failed to provide competent and diligent representation to his clients. He disobeyed his obligation to the court by failing to appear for oral arguments. He failed to adequately supervise his support staff, and then he failed to timely respond to requests for information from my office. Once formal charges were filed, Mr. Jorgensen did sign and receive an entry of appearance, but then failed to file an answer. After the motion for judgment on the pleadings was granted, the briefing schedule was set, my brief was submitted, and then Mr. Jorgensen failed to submit his brief after that. So Mr. Jorgensen, I understand, is not here today and is not arguing. When looking at sanctions for Mr. Jorgensen, I know this court has always considered aggravating and mitigating factors, and some aggravating factors I'd like to point out to the court. Initially, Mr. Jorgensen has been disciplined before. In 2012, he received a public reprimand and a one-year probation related to client matters for failing to provide competent and diligent representation and then fee issues and misconduct. Mr. Jorgensen also failed to file an answer in this matter, and he failed to file a brief that the court has directed. Additionally, I would argue aggravating factors would be at least cause harm to both the clients involved for failing to appear in oral arguments and also failing to provide the record to the client and to aid him in his appeal. Mitigating factors, I don't know that I have any to argue. Mr. Jorgensen, in his response, argued that his large case that he handled at the end of 2016 should be mitigation. But as we know, attorneys carry large caseloads, and I don't know that that would be mitigation. But we have nothing new for Mr. Jorgensen to add in any mitigation. There are many cases that I cited to in my brief regarding individuals who either failed to provide competent and diligent representation and they failed to respond to this court. A couple additional cases that I would draw your attention to, one was decided after my brief, and that is the case of Gass. I know the underlying facts in Mr. Gass' case are unrelated. He was practicing without a law license and so forth, but what is pertinent in that case is that Mr. Gass also failed to respond to this court. And this court noted at that point in time that failing to participate in the disciplinary processes is a very serious matter. And Mr. Gass was indefinitely suspended for a minimum period of 1 year. Another case that wasn't cited just for redundancy was Sutton, was another individual who was indefinitely suspended for failing to respond to this court. He, at the time of his suspension, had received previous discipline and was also suspended. Mr. Jorgensen, at this point in time, is suspended, not under a disciplinary sanction. He failed to submit proof of his continuing legal education, so his license was administratively suspended as of June 14th of 2017. So Sutton may be comparable. The suspensions are for a different reason. But at this point in time, if we would ask that Mr. Jorgensen's license be suspended, if not disbarred for his failure to respond to this court and to the Council for Discipline and for his prior disciplinary actions.
If we were to suspend him, how long would we suspend him?
Well, I would argue that the floor Ubingay was suspended for 1 year, and mitigation for Ms. Ubingay is that, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing her name, she had had no prior discipline, where Mr. Jorgensen has received other discipline. So I would say 1 year would be a floor. Mr. Moore was suspended for 2 years and then monitored for 2 years after that. And Mr. Ty and Mr. Sutton were indefinitely suspended. And then Gass was also indefinitely suspended. So I think...
What is the argument for disbarment?
I guess the argument would be that he's made no effort to defend his license or to respond to my office or to this court regarding this disciplinary action. I know this court in the past has not disbarred individuals, so I'm not making a strong argument to start disbarring individuals for not responding, but I do think it's a serious matter when attorneys don't respond to the Council for Discipline when given multiple opportunities, they don't file an answer with this court, and they don't file a brief.
What's the practical difference between indefinite suspension and disbarment?
Disbarment, they're able to apply for reinstatement after a 5-year period, where indefinite suspension, I believe it becomes they can start applying after 1 year. That doesn't guarantee reinstatement. Unless the court says indefinite suspension for a minimum of 2 years, then they couldn't apply for reinstatement until after that 2-year period.
This record does not really tell us what is underlying the events that occurred, does it?
No, and Your Honor, I would argue that we don't have much information. We have had very little response from Mr. Jorgensen. My last communication with him was July of last year.
It's not unusual for instances like this to be related to substance abuse, mental or physical illness, or other sorts of things like that, is it?
And it can be, yes. I don't want to speculate. I don't know what is going on with Mr. Jorgensen. I know in the case, I believe it was in Sutton, that this court had noted that earlier he had provided some defense regarding some mental health issues and so forth, yet at the time of that last disciplinary case, that you had no new information, so you couldn't say whether or not that was a mitigating factor or not.
Is the public's interest in being protected from an incompetent lawyer, adequately protected by an indefinite suspension?
I think it could be, yes. I think it shows both the public and the bar that the court takes a failure to respond and a failure to provide competent and diligent representation to a client seriously. I do think it provides that protection.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We will go on to the next case of the day.